Well, then good evening. If the recording has started, then let's get started. Shmuel Plotzker coming at you live from Gulf Manor Synagogue here in Cincinnati, Ohio, USA. That's the, you see that a little bit on the radio. You hear that. W something or other. Forgot the name of the actual station. And they end off at Cincinnati, Ohio, USA. And you know what? Living out here in Cincinnati, it's a pretty pleasant experience. People are friendly and warm. And coming from New York City, believe me, that takes some getting used to. People are polite. They drive politely. People walk into a store. They treat you with respect. They ask you if they can help you. It's a shocking thing, really. And I kind of get a kick out of it. We once had my wife and I were kind of, if you will, we were kind of, parenting a little bit, you know, a young lady from Israel, and she was here for a year in the local girls' high school back in the day, of American extraction, but living in Israel. She was a native Israeli of American parents, and they sent her to school here in Cincinnati. And we did what we could, and, it was working out for the most part. The point is that she could not believe how polite the people were. She thought it was all fake. And we said to her, we don't think it's fake. I mean, the people are just, nice. And they're polite. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, there are people out there who are a little bit brusque and in your face. And God bless them. I think that Israelis are like that. They're not, the most diplomatic. They'll just tell you what's on their mind. And I get a kick out of that. I mean, I lived there for 2.5 years, and you got to appreciate the candor. They'll tell you exactly, right to your face, what they're thinking. And they don't really embellish it very much. They don't gin it up and make it look, pretty. They just tell you how they feel. And you got to love that, I mean, to some extent, because, it's honesty. But over here in Cincy, in Midwest, people are a little bit more diplomatic. They're a little bit more, a little bit more. She just wasn't used to it at all. She thought it was completely false. And we explained to her that we did not agree with that. We didn't think it was false. People are different. People live in different places in the world. They pick up different customs, mannerisms, and things like that. So over here, politeness kind of rules in the Midwest. And I think that both populations, Native Israelis and Midwesterners, would be shocked if they had to spend a week or so in the other culture. They would just be amazed at the way people are. That's how people are. Okay, there, I said it. Now we can begin. And we are going to continue our studies of 1 Kings. And you know what? Those of you who were with me yesterday, I got a report from my man and Jake Wyman up in Chicago. He said, Shmuel, in a few minutes into your shiur yesterday, on Am Abonim Smecha, people were calling me, telling me, oh my gosh, he's repeating himself from a month ago, and I couldn't contact you. And I said to him, Jake, even if you would have been calling me, I can't take your phone call in the middle of my lecture. And he acknowledged that would have been kind of, difficult to get through. So you know what? I'm sorry about what happened yesterday. I'm amazed that I had actually gotten, I thought that I was on page, 320. Meanwhile, I was on page 330. And I did a 10-page review of what we did a month ago. Kind of embarrassing. And I'm sorry. And hopefully it won't happen again. But these things do happen. Hopefully it wasn't so painful. But tonight we're not going to, do that. We're going to move forward. And I wrote it down specifically that we ended last week at verse 14. So we are in 1 Kings chapter 7, verse 14. Let me just open up a window. We're getting a lot of steam up here. And even though it's kind of chilly out there these days in Cincinnati, steam is only as good as you want it to be. If it's too much, it becomes a little bit much. So we just cracked the window. Hopefully that'll help me out for an hour. Good. So here we are. We did verse 14 last week, and we're talking again about Shlomo's building of his own buildings and finishing up the temple and so on, and he's building an inner court for his house and for God's house. And it's a lot of architecture, and what can I say? I mean, it's not really my forte. I got to confess, it's not a strength of mine, but we'll do whatever we can to kind of work it through. So let me just at least read you in English verses 13 and 14, and then we're going to continue on. So if you have it, 1 Kings chapter 7, verse 13, King Solomon sent and fetched Hiram out of Tyre. Verse 14, he was a widow's son of the tribe of Naphtali, and his father was a man of Tyre, Tsor, a coppersmith, and he was filled with the wisdom and understanding and skill to work at all works in copper. And he came to King Shlomo and wrought, did, made all his work. So that's verses 13 and 14. Now we continue. Vayotzar eshnei ha'amudim nechoshes. He cast the two pillars of copper. And you have to appreciate the verb vayotzar. The rabbis are going to be playing on that. It doesn't say vayiven, he built. Rather, it says vayotzar, he cast. Okay? He cast. He made a tsura, a form. Okay? So he cast the two pillars of copper, shmona esrei ama, komas ha'amud ha'echad, 18 cubits was the height of each pillar, v'chut shteim esrei ama, yosov es ha'amud ha'sheni, and a line of 12 cubits encompassed it about, and so too the other pillar. All right. He cast two pillars of copper, 18 cubits the height of each one. Let's go take a look and see the interpretations and commentaries over here. Here in the Judaica Press, I'll read it in English for economy's sake. We're going to just kind of plow through the material, see what we can glean from it, learn from it, and keep moving. 15, Vayatzar, he cast, says the Radak Rabag in the Mitzvah, he didn't make the pillars. And it's true. The verse does not say Vayiven, Eshnei Amudim, he built the two pillars of copper. It doesn't say that. It says he cast the two pillars of copper. He did not make the pillars, only the forms, into which he poured the molten copper. And that makes sense out of our verb vayotzar. He cast them. He didn't build them. He made a form, and then he poured molten copper into the form. And that's known as casting. That's known as making a tsura. Vayotzar stems from the word tsura, a form. So says the Radak Rabag and the Mitzvah's Govern. The two pillars, he cast as Shnei Amudim, the two pillars, says Rashi, which he placed on the porch. He placed these two pillars on the porch, and they were called by the names Yachin, Uv, and Boaz. And wasn't Rabbi Yonas and Ipshitz's sefer named Yachin of Boaz? That's a question for Rabbi Berloff. Yachin, Uv, Boaz, Yachin and Boaz were the names of these two pillars. Pillars had names back then. This is an amazing thing. Okay, now here it gets a little bit juicy as we're going to get it. 18 cubits, shmona esrei ama, komas ha'amud ha'echad. 18 cubits was the height of each pillar. Says Rashi, but now we're going to read the translation. But in Chronicles 2, in 2 Chronicles, in Divrei Hayamim Beis, Chapter 3, verse 15, it says there that their height was 35 cubits. So how do you say that the height of each one was a mere 18 cubits when we're told that in 2 Chronicles their height was actually 35 cubits? How does that work? It's either 18 or 35, or I don't know why. But how could it be 18 and 35? How does that work? Says Rashi, that was because he cast both of these pillars together as one particular pillar. So 18 plus 18 will get you 36. No, okay, that's a whole lot better than 18, I guess. It's much closer to 35, but is it 35 or 36 now? That's the next question. See, he cast both of these together as one. This should have totaled 36 cubits together. But I say, he says, Rashi says, but I say the one cubit which was missing was because there was 1/2 a cubit at the top of each pillar, which was not like the work of the rest of the pillar. So you have a 1/2 cubit space at the top of each one, which doesn't look like the rest of the pillar. And 1/2 + 1/2 = 1, and there you've got your 35. And so that makes some sense. That's going to make some sense in regards to Second Chronicles, where it says that the two pillars were 35 cubits long. And our pasuk over here says that there were 18. So now Rashi's explaining that you add 18 plus 18 because he cast both of them together as one pillar, and there you got your 36. But now you got to knock off 1/2 a cubit at the top of each pillar because it wasn't like the work of the rest of the pillar. So now you're back to the 35, and now we're Mekayim, the pasuk in Second Chronicles, 35 cubits. Omitting that top 1/2 cubit of each pillar leaves a length of 17.5 cubits, together 35 cubits. The tops of the pillars were beautifully decorated, we're told. As it is said further on in this subject, we're going to see later on in this chapter 7, verse 22, the top of the pillars was lily work. Was the work of, it looked like lilies of flower, the lily flower. So all that was Rashi on our pasuk on 15, which we just started. Okay, the Radak, and I'm on page 70 in your Judaica Press. Radak reconciles this inconsistency differently. The topmost 1/2 cubit was covered by the chapiters and was therefore omitted from both pillars' total length, leaving 35 cubits. Okay, we're going to get to the word chapiter in a second. I was so excited to see a word chapiter. I said, oh, that's either a typo or chapter, but how could that be? Or it's just a word that I've never come across, so I'll Google that word. And I'm glad I did, because I came across a whole bunch of stuff that I'm going to share with you in just a moment, but not just yet. So the Radak says the topmost 1/2 cubit on each pillar was covered by a chapiter, and therefore it doesn't really count. So that 1/2 + 1/2 = 1 cubit, and there you get your 35 cubits, as it says in Divrei HaYamim. So we still have several, so we don't have 18 per se, but we do. We have 18 and 18, but the 1/2 and 1/2, they're a little bit different, so everybody's happy now. The Rabag says that each pillar was really 17.5 cubits long, but we find similar instances in which the scriptures are not exact, says the Rabag. That's something I never would have thought. I would not be so bold as to say it, but I'm glad he did say it. But okay, Rashi wants to be Mekayim both shitas, both understandings, both numbers. The Radak also wants to reconcile. The Rabag apparently doesn't seem so interested in reconciling. He says, listen, Azariah is this in the Mikra. It's not exactly 100% accurate and exact. 17.5, we round it up to 18. So it's 18. That seems to be apparently how the Rabag says it. Each one is really 17.5, but okay, it says 18. The Matsuda maintains that this additional 1/2 cubit resulted, from hammering the end of the pillar to fit into the chapiter. And I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm holding back on that word chapiter. Maybe I should reveal it. No, we'll hold off 1 more minute. 1 more Rashi. And the line, let me just read the pasuk in its completeness, because the brothers have showed up, so we'll get everybody on the same page. He, Hiram, cast the two pillars of copper. 18 cubits was the height of each pillar, and a line of 12 cubits encompassed it about, and so the other pillar. So apparently a line of 12 cubits encompassed each pillar. Each pillar had a line of 12 cubits around it. That's what I've got. And again, we're doing the best we can. We need some architects and some designers here. But if anybody else wants to start, jump in, you can.
What structure is this that he's...
A pillar? Oh, what kind of a structure is he building? He is building a great court. He's building a court, and the Lachatzar Beis Hashem, Hapnimis, is what I see in Pasuk Yudeis. And he's building the inner court of the house of Hashem. And also he's building a porch of the house. So it seems that we're kind of going between his house, Shlomo's own house, where we see on Pasuk Ches, verse 8, Uveso Sheyeshev Sham, his house he might dwell, was in the other court, within the porch. So you have some discussion about his house. And then there seems to be a discussion about, perhaps also a discussion about the house of Hashem.
Okay, I want to figure out. So the chutz is circling the omelet. It's like a little bit of a protrusion. Yeah, what is the omelet? What is the chutz made out of? The same metal that the...
Okay, let's see. Maybe this Rashi over here will shed a little bit of light. I don't think so, actually. But I'm, because I saw it already. But maybe it can. Maybe if I give it to better brains, it'll work out for us all, and we'll make some sense out of it. The chut shem esrei ama yosov es amud hasheni, a line of 12 cubits encompassed it about, and so too the other pillar. Here goes the English Rashi in the English, a line of 12 cubits encompassed it. This teaches us that it was 4 cubits. By 4 cubits in diameter. Because every circumference of 3 handbreadths has a diameter of 1 handbreadth.
That's the rounded pi? Is that the function that should be pi?
Oh, boy. You're just, no, I don't know that. I mean, I just don't know. I didn't look up pi. I'm not into the math. I'm into Bible. I'm not into
the math.
3.14?
What is its value? I mean, what does it measure? The difference, the ratio between what? The circumference of a circle and
the pi. I think the area is pi d squared or something.
I was like, is this not what we're dealing with here? So we're going with this round number of 3 instead of the 3 point whatever number?
3.14?
Well, it's a famous thing. It's a Tosfos or something. I think it's a, or it's good. Anything that has anything whose circumference is 3 will have a rochav. I don't know what rochav means. The width of width of 1. That sounds like attempting to approximate pi. I think. No. Oh, man.
Well, this requires a little bit of knowledge of geometry, and I have long since forgotten much of that.
Exactly.
Does it ever say anything?
And when I saw this, I said, well, you know, I'm not going to be able to shed much light on this, because 10th grade geometry was a long time ago, and in the law, we don't really have a lot of, I shouldn't never say we don't have any need for geometry, but it comes up rarely, I mean, pretty rarely. Maybe there's more algebra.
I was 13.
But, yeah, it's been a while since all of us.
That was a year ahead, so.
So it's been a while since we've seen high school geometry. We definitely should have worked up our geometry for this one. But you know what? We're just reading it, and as we get, you know, into it and you'll think about it, we'll marinate this in our brains over the week. This teaches us that it was 4 cubits by 4 cubits in diameter, because every circumference of 3 handbreadths has a diameter of 1 handbreadth. That is, now here it's not exactly Rashi speaking, it's the Enner speaking, that is, the diameter is approximately 1/3 the circumference. And now Rashi continues on. Now we're going to jump back into Rashi in English. And its thickness was 4 fingers, and it was hollow. Thus is this explained at the end of the book of Jeremiah, in chapter 52, verse 21 of the book of Jeremiah. And the Rashi continuing, and this is an abbreviated verse. Because he disclosed the length of one pillar, and the length of the second must be learned from it, and he disclosed the circumference of the second, and the first must be learned from it. And Yonason also agreed that both pillars measured the same, and translated thus, and a strung line of 12 cubits did compass it, and so the other pillar. What shall we make of that? I'm not really sure, but I'm prepared to move on if you guys are, because you know, circumferences and diameters and stuff. I'm lost in this.
I think an ambiguity of how to read the Pesach quite be without getting into all those things. There's two Amudim. The first says that he fastened two Amudim of the Choses. And then it says that the one Amud, one had a height of 18 Amos. And then, with a little bit of a break, it says, okay, it's cut them, like a comma. And then a line of 12 Amos surrounded, encircled the second Amud. So it looks like it's like comparing apples and oranges. The first Amud, it gives you only the height, doesn't say anything about a circling ring, thread. But the second Amud, it's the opposite, only the circling thread and not anything about the height. So before them, including the Targum, are learning the Pasuk, which is not far-fetched. It's straight forward. What a way of saying that the Pasuk says that the first Amud was that way, but the second one was the Amud, was the same way as well. And that is kind of maybe the last phrase, Yosov is to Amud HaSedi. I have to think about it further. May that it, an understood subject, will encircle the second one. So the Targum is trying to say that what the Pasuk is really saying is, like there's a missing subject here, or missing linking conjunction, and so will be for the second one. That there's no difference between the two. We're not contrasting them, which is a little bit hard to fit into the syntax, but it makes the most sense, because why would we just give the height for the one and the decorative thing for the other one?
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you, Rebrilov. All right. Trying to explicate the Rashi over there. Verse 16, we continue on. Ushtei kosaros, asa lases al roshei ha'amudim mutzak nechoshes. This is all translated as follows. Ushtei kosaros asa, he made two chapiters. There's the word, ding, 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 okay, now I can translate it. If you look that up, if you do a Google search, you'll find that they translate that word chapiter as an ornamental head or the capital, the top of a pillar. And that we find this word in several locations throughout the Hebrew Bible. One is here, where the word is koteret. I mean, obviously it's in the plural. Kotarot, kosaros, but in the singular, koseres or koteret. You'll also find it in 2 Kings, chapter 25, verse 17. So we'll just run over there for just a second. 2 Kings 25, 17. I got so many pages over here and notes, I can't even find it. A second. You know what? I'm in 1 Kings. That explains it. My book is 1 Kings.
My book.
Yes, it's both.
Oh, boy. I don't have a full-blown...
Well, Shwana, I can read if you want.
Sure.
Shwana Esrei Amok Komas Hoamun Echad, I'll wait for you to get the buses, yeah?
Yes, thanks. Okay, let's see. Malcolm Bayes, 25:17. Okay.
All right, it's talking about the details of when the Nebuchadnezzar came. It's the end of the Malachim.
Yeah.
And he destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. We're just talking about some of the details of what he found there when he took away.
Yes.
So we have Shama Porsamuna. It was the height of the form was 18. Hotera says that's a word, it says that word. Hosteris, I love the close to Kamata Kuseris. Well, I don't know if we have to go further, the third reference of Kuseris and the closest. And again, I don't know if we'll get anything other than simply showing the same word.
Yeah. And also in Second Chronicles, in Zevarim 2, chapter 4, verse 12, you'll find the word Koseris over there too. Second Chronicles 4:12. Let me go over there for a second. And let's see that one. 4:12.
Which chronicle is it? 2?
Yeah.
4:12?
4:12. Yeah. Okay. Huram. We're told his name is Huram. Vayaschurim es asiros es yoim ves mizrakos. Okay. And then 12. Amudim shnayim v'hagulos v'hakosaros. So the word that we have over here in front of us, and later on that same pasuk, eshte gulos hakosaros asher al rosh amudim. Two pillars, two bases, and capitals that are on top of the pillars. And the footnote over there says the capitals were made of two parts, the base, which was plain, and the main part, which was decorated, as described in 1 Kings 7:17, which is, of course, almost our pasuk. We're going to get there in a minute. So there's the word koseres in the plural, kosaros, and it's the word that appears here in our verse, and it's the ornamental head or the capital of a pillar, also called a diadem or a crown on top of the pillar, and that's what the word chapiter means.
And that's why in modern Hebrew, at least, koteret is your headline.
Aha. Uh-huh. A headline.
Yeah, headline. Or chapter, right. Or chapter title is called koteret. Yeah. The chapter title. Yeah.
It's called chapter title. Right. A koteret. Good to know. I did not know that. I guess there's a lot more words in that old pan that I took that I never really kind of digested and made my own. There was so much going on in that. Shkoyach. Two ornamental heads on top of the pillars. He made them latet or lases al roshei amudim to set upon the tops of the pillars. These two ornamental heads were set upon the tops of the pillars. Mutzak nechoshes, molten, made up of molten copper, and that's exactly what we said before you came in. The redactor Rabag in the Mitzvah says on the verb vayatzar ashnei amudim, it doesn't say vayiven, he built stuff. It says that he formed or cast them or fashioned them, if you will. And over there it says he didn't make the pillars, rather he made the forms into which he poured the molten copper. And because the word vayatzar hails from the word tzura, a form. So he made some sort of form, and they poured molten copper into it, and that's how he fashioned it out. So over here, he's got of one top, the Chamesh Amos Komas HaKoseres HaShenis, and 5 cubits was the length, I'm sorry, the height of the other top of the pillar. And of course, Rashi is going to have to deal with that. How does that work in regards to Second Kings? In regards to Menachem Beis. So let's go over there. 2 chapters, Shtei Kosaros. So Rashi is going to try to give us a definition that he knows of. And of course, it's going to be in Old French. So that's not going to be helpful to those of us who don't know Old French, but it sure helped out the Jews 1,000 years ago. Pommel, in Old French, an apple-shaped knob, says Rashi. From Pomme.
Yeah, yeah.
Crown, says the Radak. Molten, trehide, in Old French. Well, actually, how does he write it out over there? Tresgitir, elaz. Tresgitir.
Here they have
a
J.
Right, but in
the Gimel.
If the Gimel's going to be a J sound, how else would you? Yeah, how else would you?
It's
yeah.
Before a E or an I type thing, right?
So this just
French is pronounced J, like in English. Modern French is J, right? That's just a sound change that happens in French. And I think the last two letters, the U raise, is probably the infinitive ending.
T-O. That sounds a whole lot better.
Does that mean when you take the whole piece of metal, where you have a what at the end? What do you say, where you have a D?
Yeah, they give you a D in the English.
Because that's the participle, maybe, instead of the infinitive. You know, it was molten, it was done. And Trenton would have a D, as opposed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was, my limited grammatical knowledge, fresh. I'm thinking, because that's the kind of process with metal, where you take the whole, you know, sheet of the metal, and then you beat around it to get your shape that you want, rather than to take components and soldering or whatever you do to them.
Mm.
I think that might be what it means. Because you have that in Trumor and Tisaba, mm-hmm. You know, those marshios.
Right.
Seven, what is it called? I mean, Mishozov. Oh, that's Mishaz, what is Mishaz?
We don't have that word over here, right?
So what does it say in English? What does it mean?
5 cubits.
Now, Mutzak.
Mutzak. Well, all we're told is just the Trish is there.
Well, wait a minute. In the English, it doesn't?
That's all you get.
All
you get Rashi in Old French.
Right, but
molten.
I thought that it didn't say molten. Molten means liquid, right?
Yeah, right.
So, they made it liquid. They worked. It's, while we're making it, it was liquid.
Mm-hmm.
How else would you make it? Maybe, I don't know, as opposed to take out solid pieces and get it out of it together, I don't know.
Okay. Well, that's all we get over here, an explanation of that word. Mutzak is the Old French. 5 cubits, chamesh amos komas hakoseres ha'echos. 5 cubits was the height of one chapter. Nu, and at the end of this book of Kings, says Rashi, at the end of Malachim, and for that you got to go to Malachim Beis.
Yeah, that was the other one he told, that you told about the chapters.
Yeah. And at the end of the book, in the end of Malachim, in Malachim Beis 25:17, he says that each was 3 cubits high. So what's it going to be? Is it 3 cubits high as per Malachim Beis? Or is it 5 cubits high as per Malachim Aleph? Which one is it? Our sages also were concerned with this apparent inconsistency. And we learned in the Brisa of 49 measurements, this is astonishing to me, in parens, this is Rabbi Rosenberg and Rabbi Hochberg writing, a collection of Brisos no longer available.
Which one?
The Brisa of 49 measurements.
Uh-huh.
Now,
49.
Shaninu b'mishnah arba'im v'teisha midos.
Wait.
Says Rashi. We learned that the Brysa are 49 measurements. A collection of Brysos no longer available, said the rabbis, the editors. See introduction to our Gadas Bereshis and Rav Pa'alim. Does anybody have any insight into what Rashi's calling Mishnah Arba Invitesha?
Yeah.
Or Mishnah Arba Invitesha Midos.
While we're working, I could Google about that.
It says that, you know, these are not available.
Right. But Rashi had it 1,000 years ago, and we no longer have it.
Right. No longer exists.
That's really something. Shall we do a quick Google search? Can you give me that moment? Let's just see. I don't even know what to call it. 49 measurements?
Or Mishnah Arba Invitesha Midos. Use Rashi's terminology.
No, I don't really see that coming up.
You want to try Brysa says Mishnah?
I get the funny feeling that they're right, or it's non-existent and no longer
that's
available. Right, not even over here do I see anybody coming up with something that remotely looks like Mishnah 49 measurements. I don't see that at the moment coming up. Right. Okay. Our sages, too, were concerned with this apparent inconsistency. So what is it? Is it 5? Is it 3? And we learned in Brysa 49 measurements, 2 cubits of the lower part of the chapiters were similar to the pillar because there were no designs in them. So 2 cubits of the lower part of the chapiter were similar to the pillar. They're unadorned, unembellished. And the 3 upper cubits, which were extended beyond the pillars, were surrounded with designs. Okay. So you got pretty plain stuff on the bottom, and you've got some really elaborate stuff on the top. As it is said in Pasuk Yud Zayin, we're not quite there yet. Shvachim Masa Shvacha. Nets of checker work. Shvachim Masa Shvacha. Nets of checker work. Wow. Oh, okay. Mrs. Borloff says she's a little bit confused. I'm going to try to make her completely confused. Here we go. Go ahead.
So he's saying here that the bottom 2 cubits were like part of the pillar and the top of the pillar and didn't have any design. And then above the pillar you had this 3 upper cubits. But I thought that a pillar like goes all the way up and doesn't have like a top that you can add to. You know, because pillars are generally supporting something and you don't generally stick.
All the elaborate things, the Doric columns,
But those were carved within the pillar, not sitting at the sitting on top of the pillar.
I don't know what to say. I don't know how it looked. We're just trying to make some sense out of these words here in our pasuk about 5. Chamesh amos komas. 5 cubits was the height of the one chapiter. So now we're being told, well, because we've got a different pasuk, it tells them about three, so now we're going to try to make them shtim. Three, five, so which is it? The answer is it is tucker that way. It's both three and five. It's two cubits on the lower part of the chapter and nothing on them. So it's like they're not even like existing. Then you got the three upper cubits on the very top, and those have designs, and that is Micaiah the Pusuk in 2 Kings, talking about how they're three cubits high. No, meanwhile, it also says five cubits over here, so which is it? The answer is it's both. It's three cubits up on top, and that's beautiful work. And two cubits on the bottom, nothing to write home about. Three plus two, there's your five that satisfies 1 Kings, and you got the three cubits that are elaborate, that satisfies 2 Kings, and now we can turn the page.
Right.
So all I got.
It's inserted in two cubits depth. The pillar is inserted into the...
I think so. Two cubits in the lower part, similar to the pillar, no design, unembellished. But the three upper cubits, now that's a big gadilla. Okay? Nets of checker work. I'm continuing on at the top of page 71 in the Rashi translation and commentary. Okay? As it is said, nets of checker work, very pretty and elaborate work. They were surrounded by the likes of the branches of a palm tree. And I say, therefore, says Rashi, he did not count those two lower cubits at the end of the Book of Kings because they were similar to the pillar. And the pillar was inserted into the chapter two cubits in depth. What you were saying, Mr. Biller? So there you have it. Unembellished bottom, two cubits. Put the pillar inside that. Those are your two. Up on top, you have three beautiful cubits looking like, palm tree stuff, like a lulav, whatever. Palm tree, that's pretty. And there you got your five. And that makes sense for us, and also makes sense regarding 2 Kings, when Nebuchadnezzar comes and destroys stuff.
Okay, then he just contradicts himself what these little things look like.
How so?
Here he's talking about nets of checker work are surrounded by the like the branches of a palm tree, and he already defined these as being like apple-shaped knobs.
Well, this is Burlap is usually asking a very, very good question. On the one hand, we're told chapiters are like apple-shaped knobs, and now we're being told nets of checker work in the next pasuk, and then you've got palm trees. Okay. Burlap will get us out of this problem.
No, I won't. I'm getting more basic problem. It looks like... that the Polish would say that there were two, whoever compiled the Sefer Melachim was working with two documents parallel to each other, because Pasuk Yurches seems to have no knowledge of the Sukkim that preceded it, right? Vayas or Amudim, and what's Amudim? It was a different Amudim than the ones in Tetzvot, presumably, but it looks like we're starting from square one, checkerboard square one, Vayas and Tzuamudim, how the columns were made. Now, any hint that the columns that were mentioned in Test 12 were known in the source? And rapidly the following, I'm not sure, and we've got to go to the following, Sukkim might even seem to parallel the preceding Sukkim, the Chosaros, and so on. And so what does Rashi say? Rather than fortune.
Talking about Pasuk Yitzayim now, right?
Oh, 1 minute. Oh, I'm sorry. I was working early in your class.
Okay, so we're going to get there. We're going to get
Your question was a Yitzayim.
Question on, like, Tzayin, how are we understanding what it looked like? Was it apple-shaped? Was it palm tree shaped? Was it checkerboard or something else? And I'm going to either plead the fifth or stomp ignorance or kick it over to next week and hope you forget it. I don't know how to answer.
Did you Zion know you said Zion? Doesn't you Zion, what was it? Tell Zion what information do we have? We have two of these chapters. Chapters that were put on the heads of the columns and gives their dimension. Now, Yud Zion, since you had this ratchet word, whatever it was, okay, so how is that a contradiction, Janet? You say Yud Zion contradicts Tet Zion?
I'm saying Rashi. Rashi says.
Seems to be telling
that
a different look.
Are like apple shaped knobs. And then he's describing things as checker work with palm trees and. Tom Cleveland.
Yeah, you know, I think you're asking something. I don't know.
It's on the coast of us. So the apple shape apparently was the basic shape of the coceras itself. And then as the adornment of it, they had I don't know if it was drawn on or added or attached to it, but that's the difference. One is the actual coceras, the other is what goes on it, what decorates it. Because in Uzziah it says they make these things, la coteros, for the coteros, which are the top of the columns. So it's not that it was they're identical to the coceros, they were made to embellish the coceros. That's how to answer that.
Sure. Might very well answer. Let's finish off over here. On 16, the redactive Obag and the Mitzvah maintain that it is sufficient to say he did not mention the other two cubits because they were similar to the pillars. Okay. Now let's go into 17, Yud Zayin. Here we go. Sevachim ma'asei sevacha gedilim ma'asei shar shiros lakosaros Asher al Rosh Amudim, nets of checker work, Sevachim Maase Sevacha, nets of checker work, Gedilim Maase Sharsheros, wreaths of chain work. This is how it's translated, wreaths of chain work, Lakoseros Asher al Rosh Amudim, for the chapiters which were on the top of the pillars. Okay. Shiva la koseres ha'echos, seven for one chapter, the shiva la koseres ha'shenis, seven for the other. Let's go take a look and see what, if anything, we can get from this. Here we go. Reading the English version of Rashi, nets of checker work, sevachim ma'ase sevacha. The nets which they had were similar to a type of head covering or cap, which is called coiffée in Old French.
Oh,
let's just make sure.
Coiffée?
Oh, a coiffée of the Arabs. A coiffée. Well, that sure does sound totally similar to that. Shakurin, he writes, Kuf Vav Yud Fei Aleph. Koifa? Would you pronounce what Rashi's writing as koifa? Or would you say kofa? You want in English over here, they're trying to make it sound kofa.
English sounds spelled.
Here
they have C-O-F-E-A. Yeah. Shandoma kimin kipa. Shakorin kafia. Wow. Now I'm really thinking I'm getting it. Is the Hebrew kippah, dome, equivalent to the Arabic kafia? Is that the same word? And is the kafia in Arabic meaning, you know, covering, head covering, dome? Is that what the word kafia is? I'm just asking an actual question because I'm not sure. When the Arabs have a kafia, what, wearing their kafia, what are they wearing? Are they wearing a head covering? Are they wearing a dome? Do you hear what I'm saying? Is it the same word? Hebrew, kippah, Arabic, kafiyah. They're so similar, there's got to be a connection there between the two of them. It's got to be. I mean, Rashi's screaming it at me, and I never thought about that. That kippah and kafiyah are that related. It never occurred to me, because my Arabic is non-existent.
We have to check the etymology, the Arabic. We have the tools to check Arabic etymology well enough. It's very misleading to take two words from different languages and even to say that have its original resemblance to assume that there's a genetic relationship between them. It may be, but they're very different ways of telling. Your sound changes are different, and your traits really semantics form as well as the semantic range of meanings. For example, the word for daughter, Donna, is the same in Japanese and Italian.
Mm-hmm.
If we go back a few hundred years in either of those languages, it would not be true.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different words. It's
the same. Fascinating. One second.
Well, they agree on the definition, but they're not. Wikipedia says that it's from the city of Kufa.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know if that's...
Kafia, what you were talking about? Who are Kafia?
That's what the etymology of the word.
The word Kafia?
Huh?
I see what you're saying. I see the same thing over here. Uh-huh.
I mean, they all agree what it means.
The kafiya or kufiya, in Arabic kufiya, meaning from the city of Kufa, and the plural kufiyat, also known as a chutra, shema, hata, mashada, Khafiya in Persian.
Saying from Al Kufa,
uh-huh.
Which was a town in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you name a headdress after?
Right.
A city?
Yeah, I don't know.
But that wasn't very much.
Oh, scarves like the Arab kafiya, also known as a shemach, are part of traditional Middle Eastern dress. The Arab kafiya. And so they're clearly, it's some sort of head covering. It's a scarf that maybe the women are wearing. I'm just thinking out loud over here. Well, there's a man over here, and he's clearly wearing some headdress over here in my Google that I'm coming up with. Kafiya.
Oh, this one says that the origin is probably from
from what?
Late
Latin.
Kofia, C-O-F-E-A, plus Yolaya, which is similar to the...
Uh-huh. And you get the order of the cloth.
That's Colin.
300, 400.
That's Colin. Speculation.
Uh-huh. Now, the order of the coif is a legal, it's an honor society in law schools. The order of the coif. I was curious where that came from. The order of the COIF. Let me go there. Order of the Coif. It's an honor society for United States law school graduates. A student at an American law school earns a JD and graduates in the top 10% of his or her class is eligible for membership if the law school is a chapter of the order of the Coif. Okay, just curious as to the definition. The ancient order of barristers in England. difficult to pinpoint the advent of the ancient order of the coif in England. Members were called brothers of the coif, and they each took a solemn oath to give legal counsel to the king and his people. Okay. Okay. All right. The coif. Okay, we're going to have 5 more minutes or so. So let's see if we can go through 17. Nets of checkerwork, wreaths of chainwork in English. I'll just read the whole chapter, for the whole verse. For the chapiters which were on the top of the pillars, 7 for one chapiter and 7 for the other. Nets of checkerwork, wreaths of chainwork for these ornamental tops on the tops of the pillars. Says Rashi, nets of checkerwork, the nets which they had were similar to a type of head covering or cap, which is called coiffure in Old French. Checker work. Okay. Gedila Maaseh Sharsharos. Checker work, they were encompassed by forms of branches of a palm tree. As in the book of Job, chapter 18, verse 8, he walks upon a snare. Checker work, they were encompassed by forms of branches of a palm tree. These branches were designed like meshwork.
Here's a puzzle. Kishulach bereshes bereglov, now tzvachah yishalach. Whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting the idea a little bit. A lovely pattern of repeating of a net-like checkerboard kind of a thing. These branches were designed like meshwork, and the wreaths which were braided and twisted together as chain work. So says Rashi and the Metzudos. Shiva lekoseres ha'echas, 7 for the one chapiter. There were 7 branches in each encircling design for each checker work. There were 7 branches in each encircling design for each checker work, says Rashi. Wow. Okay. So, we got somewhere tonight. We did a few psukim. Hopefully we got some clarity, although I'm not sure I'm so clear on everything, but we did something. And we're slowly but surely plowing our way through. Hopefully everybody enjoyed. God willing, next week, hope to be able to give the class again. Hope everybody can come on out and join us next Tuesday night, God willing, for another exciting Tanakh Tuesday, starting at 7:30, right here at Gulf Atlanta Synagogue in our School of Jewish Studies, as we continue our study of 1 Kings chapter 7. It's a rather long chapter, and we're getting through it. Finish verse 17. God willing, we'll kick off next week with verse 18. Shmuel Plotzer signing off, wishing everybody a wonderful and productive rest of the week. Enjoy your Shabbos Kodesh. And God willing, those of you who join us on Eimon Bonim Smecha, could be I can't make it because I'm going to be in Columbus at a deposition precisely at that time. So unless that gets canceled, that, and I can't imagine it's going to be, I probably will not be able to give the class next week on Eimon Bonim Smecha on Monday afternoon. I'll be busy, but we'll try to get it to you in 2 weeks. However, Tanakh Tuesdays, that should continue. Bless you, that should continue apace next week. So wishing everybody a really productive rest of the week and a good Shabbos. Thanks so much for joining us. Signing off from Gulf Atlanta Synagogue. Have a good week and a good shout us all. Take care and be well. Bye bye now.
Listen, I believe the Chavrusha is just a baby.